I remember it well, even 30 years later. We had just visited the Church of the Annunciation in Nazareth, that magnificent structure devoted to the Virgin Mary, and presumably located on the site of the well where Mary received the announcement by Gabriel that she was pregnant. And the church was in the process of being extensively renovated that year in preparation for the Jubilee year of 2000. And yet that had not deterred hundreds of visitors from filling the huge nave, all anxious to offer prayers at the site of the Annunciation of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Our guide informed us that our next stop would be the Church of St. Joseph, located near the traditional site of the carpenter shop where Jesus spent his childhood. Our arrival there brought sighs of disappointment. The church, small and unassuming, was not much larger than St. Peter's. Tucked away in a dark corner of Nazareth, the church was in poor repair. As we entered, we found ourselves alone, and the only noise was the echo of our feet on the floor. So much for Joseph. During Advent, we often speak eloquently of Mary, the mother of Jesus. She becomes the focus of our pageants and the object of our songs. Today, however, I would like to say a few simple things for her quiet and mostly forgotten husband, Joseph, the father who raised Jesus and was so influential in Jesus' early life. We know the story preceding the birth of Jesus, don't we? Well, the story, according to Matthew, is a little different than one we're used to. Matthew's story begins in Galilee, in Judea, the northern province of modern-day Israel, where an older man and a younger woman are betrothed. Their engagement was the first step of the marriage process and carried with it a strict set of obligations for both parties. For Joseph's part, he pledged to honor Mary and prepare a home for her. And for Mary's family, it meant keeping her chaste until the marriage ceremony. However, a dark cloud had overshadowed what should have been a happy event. Mary was pregnant. And Joseph knew that he was not the responsible party, and as a righteous, law-abiding man of faith, he knew that the law gave him two options. He could publicly divorce Mary, and Joseph's righteous name would be preserved, his dignity left intact. However, to do so would have made Mary's guilt public. There was a second option. He could privately divorce her, in which case he would quietly put her away, but the stain of adultery would still be attached to her and would likely lead her to being shunned by proper Jewish society. Well, Luke tells us that Mary was blessed among women, but Matthew reminds us that Joseph was placed in an embarrassing position among men. Just imagine how Joseph must have felt when all of this was revealed to him by an angel in a dream. He would have known about the biblical accounts of miraculous births, but those were just stories from long ago. And this was real, almost surreal. After all, there were no stories of a virgin becoming pregnant. Nothing could have prepared Joseph for this. There was no roadmap in how he should respond. As a man of faith, Joseph, Matthew tells us, was a righteous man. A man right with the law, a man who loved the law. He loved the law as God's gift to God's people. A man who believed that living the law out in his own life was an act of love for God and for his fellow Jews. As a righteous man, he would have found that what happened to Mary to be offensive. But while he loved the law and wanted to follow its strictures, he also loved Mary and wanted to follow his heart. Do you see Joseph's dilemma? Joseph is caught in a bind between the rock of loving Torah, loving the law, in the hard place of loving Mary. So what was Joseph supposed to do? Even as God intervened with Mary, God intervenes with Joseph. God appears to Joseph in a dream, leading him to make the scandalous decision to marry his betrothed and beloved Mary. "This child is part of my plan to bless the world," says the vision. And Joseph chooses to believe what he sees and hears. A decision that sets him out on what will be a lonely and uncharted path. You see, Joseph's decision carries with it at least three self-sacrificing actions. He will marry his pregnant fiance. He will name and claim the child as his own. And he will assume responsibility for the child's conception. And he alone will bear the shame for violating Mary's virginity. Have you ever been faced with the kind of decision where you've had to walk a lonely and uncertain path like Joseph did? Have you ever taken a road that you thought was right and hoped was right without any signs to tell you exactly what the right choice was? Have you ever faced ridicule for following your heart and not your head? How much easier it would be if we could know for certain the paths that you and I are called to take. But when we see Joseph trudging on to Bethlehem with Mary, we are reminded of our own uncertain journeys and our own stumbling, which we hope will be called faithfulness. At least that's what we hope. Is that the only message that we glean then from Joseph's story? Following God's will in faithfulness? Well, consider this. Later on in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus urges his disciples to exceed in righteousness. Might not Joseph's choices be seen as an early manifestation of a new form of righteousness, a righteousness that becomes excessive because it's blended with compassion and mercy? Remember that Joseph's first impulse was to divorce Mary quietly in order that she should not be put to shame or suffer public humiliation. And that's not an easy decision for one as righteous as Joseph. But Joseph goes even further. He is willing to bear the guilt of another, to silently suffer ridicule for another, all out of love. And doesn't that, when all is said and done, make Joseph an apt role model for God's newborn son? Can we say that Jesus might have reflected on the mantra, like father, like son? Another thing about Joseph, his righteousness was also excessive in that it was so quiet. He didn't show off his righteousness at Mary's expense. The righteous one is not out to shame others or to call attention to righteousness. How different the image of righteousness that Joseph exhibits, wanting to do the right thing but also not wanting to harm Mary, from so many self-righteous prophets of our own day. In fact, when you think about it, Joseph never pronounces anything, never says a word. At least that is recorded. Joseph left us no songs to sing, no speeches to remember. His witness is in what he does more than what he says. He obeys the divine summons to Mary, to obey the summon to flee to Egypt with his family, and then obey to return to Nazareth and set up a carpenter shop. All without a word recorded by the Gospels. Without a single word. His witness is not in speech, but in action. An active response to the will of God. Through Joseph, Matthew's gospel, I believe, introduces us to a new righteousness. Matthew would have us believe that to be righteous is to listen to God and respond quietly and steadfastly, whether we understand or not, no matter what the world may think, no matter the embarrassment it may cause. From the moment Emmanuel, God with us, was conceived, he had a way of causing righteous people to rethink what it meant to be righteous. And in Joseph, we have the first disciple who seems to get it. Here is a disciple who exhibits a righteousness that is tinged with mercy. He's a disciple who understands that righteousness is born out of compassion for others. He is a disciple who grasps that at the heart of righteousness there lies the love of God, a love that leads to love another. Remember my trip to Nazareth? Just as our tour group was leaving the Church of St. Joseph, we passed the main altar. And there, quietly kneeling before the altar, was a lone, hooded monk in prayerful silence. It was to be the only time in our 10-day tour of Israel that we saw anyone kneeling in prayer before an altar. And in that moment, the silence of the church, that had moments before seemed to indicate a vacant space, had suddenly been transformed. The church suddenly seemed alive with the Spirit of God. Instead of teeming masses of tourists scurrying here and there, we found instead a simple man of prayer, quietly and unassumingly living out his life of simple devotion to the God who gave him life. As we spoke later, the members of our group agreed. Here in the Church of St. Joseph, we had truly encountered God, quietly and yet profoundly, without fanfare or glitz, in the humble surroundings of the shop of a carpenter, the earthly father of Jesus. As our Advent preparation gives rise to Christmas joy, may we remember the oft-forgotten Joseph, who silently yet lovingly does what he must do out of devotion to God and to the woman that he loves. And in so doing, beckons us to follow in the way that he chose and which ended up becoming the path that leads to life. Amen.